Well, in any case, I just started a new tape, but in any case, the four of us went down to the water late at night as the sun set, and said we agreed that we would come back, if we came back to Kauai, we'd, individually or as a group, would search out this wonderful
place.
Mystical place, actually, and recall all four people being there. I was quite touched by that, of course, but I'm touched by many things, I guess. Anyway, this place is still there, and we obviously it's still there. It's, I mean, it's going to be there for, I don't know what's going to take it out, but Hurricane Iniki couldn't take it out, so it's still there. But it's a temple area, really. A temple is what it is, not a temple area, a temple. And we could see from our porch, it's called Lanai, I guess. Is that right, Lanai? I think.
Yeah.
We could see there were weddings conducted down there, or what, look, we couldn't exactly see, we didn't have binoculars, we swore we'd buy these, by the way, but we could see what appeared to be weddings being conducted down on this holy ground. And I had some reservations about that, but Wago set my mind at ease. That is, Christian ceremonies being conducted on what would essentially be called pagan areas, although Wago said, not pagan, holy. But anyway, the night before we came back, we went down, it was sunset, late in the evening, the heel of the evening, as Stuart, the American painter, said, and we went down to this really holy area, just the two of us, nobody there, and it really was a wonderful kind of experience. Now, I have to add a little story, and we'll fill in the details on this later, maybe, if I can remember to do this, but we bought some couple of pieces of jewelry, necklaces, necklace jewelry, if you will, and they're actually fish hooks, and what they're called is hei makue. Makue is fish hook in Polynesian, and hei means to suspend, so it's or to hang, if you will. So a suspended necklace or whatever. Quite popular in all of Polynesia. Men and women wore necklaces and what have you. So we bought these incredible necklaces, which I think we'll maybe devote some time later to talking about. But we were wearing our necklaces, and the fellow we bought them from, he told us, not just bought them from, but who actually made them on Kauai, and married to what I would judge to be a full-blood or very close to a full-blood Polynesian woman, as far as I can see. He said the Hawaiians believe that the ground is magical. Not soil, but so much, but the ground is a magical thing, filled with incredible powers and energy, if you will. And that if you would put something on the ground, whatever this something was could absorb this energy. Now, the concept of mana is that idea, is that mana, this energy force, psychic force, if you will, is transferable. That was a concept that Polynesia, you could transfer this energy force. So what we did was, there were two things we did. We took our necklaces off, and there was, and there is right now, I can even visualize it, there was a huge, pretty huge, big as a big dining room table, I think, which looked like an offering bowl. It had a cutout center where you could, a bowl, if you will. And we put our necklaces in this bowl, and then we took them out into the central area of this temple area and put them on the ground. So we had these incredible makue necklaces.
Hei
makue.
Makua.
Makua. I have to Margo's so good at languages, and I ain't never learned none, you know. So we have now two necklaces which are incredibly charged from the Hawaiian Islands, sort of mystical. Ooh. P.S. to the Dreyfus report made earlier, or comments made earlier. On the news tonight was a discussion about Israel and Jews, and after over 50 years, or I guess about 50 years of a Jewish nation, they absolutely have not decided, according to this report, is what is a Jew? How do you know if you're a Jew? And this is a major argument going on there now, and they're ready, getting ready to have the last, shootout, the last corral over. Well, they don't have corrals in Israel. What do they have? I don't know. Shootout of the last bar mitzvah about who is a Jew and what constitutes to being a Jew. So I think poor Dreyfus, the French couldn't have had a good handle on that 100 years ago. P.S. on the Dreyfus report, my brother is not circumcised. I am circumcised. And I wondered if it's possible that, as strange as it may seem, believe it or not, remember him, believe in that Ripley, that I could be Jewish and my brother is not. Now, think about that. Now, in big cities like Brooklyn, New York, they had takeout. You could go to Chinese restaurants, and they had Chinese takeout. That's been around who knows how long, but it's been around since I was a young teenager, that you could go to a Chinese restaurant, and they would give you the whole thing in these little cardboard boxes with the little wire handles and a little container of soy sauce. I thought that was just great. I can remember going to a Chinese restaurant like on Sunday evening and getting Chinese takeout and taking it home, and everybody or whoever was there eating it. I thought that was really great. And there were some places, there were diners in big cities where you could go in and actually get a bowl of soup in the takeout or whatever. They'd cook you a hamburger and french fries or whatever and put it in these little plastic containers. And so there is a long history of takeout, but in big cities. And now, of course, it's getting to be where nobody even knows how to cook anymore. But Chinese takeouts were famous, and anybody that's been to the movies has at some time or other seen the hero and the heroine sit around and solve the case over Chinese takeout. But in any case, so it's been around a long time. One of the things that Margo and I did on three occasions while we were there was we had Korean
food. While we were where?
Well, while we were in Hawaii, we had two Chinese takeout meals and one Korean takeout meal. There was a Korean restaurant right near us, and we had Korean barbecue chicken and whatever. And then we had stir-fried, I don't know, chicken and stuff. But it was fun. What we did was we had a kitchen in the apartment in Kauai, and we cooked rice and maybe even a vegetable on the side. And while the rice was cooking, we'd run down to the, it was only a block and a half away, run down to the takeout place and order stir-fried whatever, you know, chicken or I think shrimp. We had shrimp one night. And or to the Korean restaurant. And we brought it home, and sort of remembrances of things. Here we are, I don't know why, 50 years later, eating Chinese takeout. I might add to that, when we went to London with Kathy, we found a Chinese restaurant there, and we had Chinese takeout. And we took it up in a hotel room, can you believe, in London, and sat around and had Chinese takeout. So, long history of that, and it's kind of a fun thing to do. I thought actually that I think there is too much debate. It's been 50 years in Israel, and they can't decide who is a Jew and who isn't. And I think I'm going to announce the Quentin W. Fitzgerald Emeritus Professor decision on this question after giving it some thought. If you are circumcised, you are a Jew. If you are not circumcised, you are not Jewish. Now, that is it. And I'm planning, as I understand, it's dual citizenship, and I'm going to think about tomorrow applying to get become a citizen of Israel. I want to tell a little story about linoleum, and it's almost, I think, a forlorn story in some ways. But I think in 1951, my brother Thomas lived in a temporary housing constructed during World War II in an area, Margot thinks, between Ann Arbor and Detroit. I don't clearly remember. I don't know who the housing was built for, whether it's just military or a couple of government employees or what. I really don't know. But we visited, I think the year was 1951. And I remember we went to this not a great place to live and all that, but it was all right. Uncle Tom, or my brother Tom, didn't have any money or much money, and certainly I didn't have any money either. But in any case, the prior owner showed up one night. Well, not prior owner, but the prior occupant of this apartment. And what he said was, he told my brother, he said, you know, when we lived here, we put in a piece of linoleum in front of the stove. And sure enough, there was a piece of linoleum there, I'd say about a yard square, something like that, I don't remember. And he said, I sure would think it would be appropriate if you, my brother, would buy this piece of linoleum because it doesn't come with the apartment. It's like, it's an added extra. Well, my brother said, gee, I'm not sure I want to buy a piece of linoleum. And the guy said, okay. And he picked up the linoleum and left with it. He took the linoleum with him. And I think that's a sort of, both a forlorn story, it seems to me, that some guy would worry about a piece of crap like that. But I also think it has to do with either poor people behavior or behavior of people who don't have any or much money, and that they behave in sort of, they behave like that. I don't know what else to say. Now, how I would react, but I would want to say, oh yeah, that sounds cool, here's $10. I really want that linoleum there. Here, take $20 from me, and, you know, I don't know if I'd do that, but it seems to me maybe I would. The other thing, I made a little slip of the tongue, and I would say, my brother, when we grew up as children, my brother was called Hubert. And I think his name was Thomas Hubert Fitzgerald, but he was called Hubert by at least my parents. And I think because my father's name was Thomas, and maybe there was less confusion there. And somewhere along the line, he stopped using Hubert, I guess, and used the word, his name is Thomas. My children, I think, where I got it from, my children referred to him as Uncle Tom. And so he, somewhere years and years ago, he became, in our household, in our lexicon, if you will, Uncle Tom. Not in an Uncle Tom's Cabin kind of way, not a derogatory way, but simply, I often think of my brother, I call him Uncle Tom, and that's it, I guess. On Kauai, a halfway connected story was, we went to the markets on Kauai, the farmers markets, and maybe sometime or someday we'll talk about those, and maybe the whole Kauai trip, I suppose we should talk about that. But almost everything in the markets is sold for a dollar. The unit of sales is a dollar. Now, not absolutely 100%, but mostly a dollar. So you could buy 10 of these for a dollar, or 3 bunches of onions for a dollar, whatever it is, a dollar. But there are some, there were some exceptions where maybe it'd be 50 cents or 75 cents, but not many, but some. Now, we watched a woman buy, and Mark will finish this story to me, because I'm not sure I really noticed this, but a woman bought like 3 different bags of vegetables and gave the woman, the seller, like $5 or something. And the woman was a little bit confused about what the total cost was. So the woman who was buying the vegetables, a really nice lady, said, well, it's a dollar for the scallions and a dollar for the potatoes and 75 cents for the 2 onions, and that comes to, you know, $3.75. The woman didn't get that. She couldn't quite, she had some money in her hand and some coins in her hand, and she gave the woman that was buying it the wrong change. She didn't give her enough change. She really owed the woman like 50 cents, and she gave the woman the quarter. And the woman said, thank you very much. Margot observed that the woman knew that this was the wrong change. She had added it up in her head and told the woman, but this woman selling the vegetables, she was a little bit confused by this. And the woman said, hey, she didn't say anything. She said, thank you very much, and went on about her business and let the woman back out a quarter, you know. And I don't know, that's kind of a poignant story too, isn't it? I think that, for me, I have to tell you, the bottom line is this is a golden rule. I'm thinking about putting a tattoo somewhere on my body. Don't be poor. Children, all grandchildren, future grandchildren, don't be poor. All this crap you read about poor and the poor will inherit shit, they inherit nothing. Don't be poor. That's not cool. It's stupid. Money is the lubricant of society. Think about that. I just invented that saying. I must tell a story about the soap and the cheese and the lunch. Women, my mother washed her laundry with Fell's Naphtha soap. It was a bar of soap, a kind of orangey colored, made with lye and tallow. I don't know, it was horrible. It really would, I think, take the skin off an elephant. But everybody, all the women used that kind of soap. And I think they used it before there was Tide and that kind of thing. But I remember we sat down one day for lunch, and I don't know for sure who was fully there, but Paula was there, my mother was there, and I was there, and I suppose my brother was there. But in any case, somewhere along the line, I noticed that this Fell's Naphtha soap had a vague resemblance to cheddar cheese. So my mother put out a plate of cheddar cheese, I don't know what else we had that day for lunch, and I sliced off, unbeknownst to any, a couple of slices of Fell's Naphtha soap, and carefully placed it between this cheddar cheese. Well, the Fell's Naphtha soap, Paula, my sister, she was younger, of course, and she picked it up, and she bit into it and chewed on that Fell's Naphtha soap, and she went right through the ceiling. I mean, it was like eating a bar of lye, and I thought it was incredibly funny, and I don't know whether I was beaten for that or what, I don't remember, but anyway, kind of funny, cruel story. I wonder if she remembers that. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I know it took place in this kitchen, in this slummy place we lived in, but I'm not sure I knew the argument or what it was about or anything. I certainly don't remember it. But I do know that there was a teacup involved, a teacup and saucer involved in this argument. When my father was drinking tea or what, I guess. And he threw, I'm pretty sure it was my father, threw the teacup into the corner of the kitchen. And my mother wouldn't clean a teacup up. That teacup and the saucer sat in that corner gathering dust and spider webs for a long, long time. I don't know how long. It wasn't something I would have ever said anything about. And I guess my mother wouldn't clean it up, my father wouldn't clean it up. And just sat there gathering dust and I don't know, maybe it's still there. I remember going to a boat show in New York City. I guess they have an annual boat show. Probably still do. As they have an annual boat show every January in Seattle. I always say I want to go, but it's always in January, and I think, oh God, you've got these icy roads, so I never go to the boat show. But I think I remember going to this boat show as a kid, and one thing I decided is I wanted a boat. I just thought boats were great, you know, sailboats, motorboats, rowboats. And I still do. I just think boats are one of those. A boat would be one of these wonderful things. And actually, when I sit down and think about it, I know it really is not true. Boats are dumb and they're expensive and they always need work and whatever, and you don't use them enough. And all. I know all the arguments. But nevertheless, it's sort of a dreamy thing in my life. Wouldn't it be wonderful to have a boat? A boat joke. A boat, you put a boat in the water, it makes a hole in which you pour endless amounts of money in. That's a boat joke. Other boat joke is there are two great days when in owning a boat. The day you buy it and the day you sell it. So, and they're probably both absolutely true. Final, or nearly so final, comment on boats. Not just boats, but it may be in life that you should have this strong desire for something. I really want blank, fill in the blank. And you never realize this, you never fill in the blank. You always have this longing for something, whatever it is. And maybe that's a good thing, because I think often you fill in the blank with whatever it is, airplane, boat, motorhome, or something like that. It's not as satisfying as the wanting of it. And you know, there was a song, I don't know when even, in the 70s, in which the woman told these little vignettes in the song, and then she was then the sort of chorus was, is that all there is? And I think maybe that's true with boats. You know, you buy a boat, they're incredibly expensive. And then you buy them and you go out sailing, and then you say, gee, is that it? Where if you have to dream of a boat, it's maybe possibly more satisfying. Final boat story, which is really not about boats at all, but it's the 5 more feet story. And that is, you own a boat, it's like 34 feet. And then you say, oh yeah, I have a really nice boat, it's 34 feet. But you know, if I just had 5 more feet, if I could, I don't know, right about 40 feet, 39 feet, that would be just total. I'd be in pig heaven if I had that. And sadly, that's a comment about life, because that's the way people say, oh, yeah, sure, I own a automobile, but I really would like a Cadillac, you know. So, I don't know. I realize I grew up learning a litany of ethnic names, street names, I guess, or vernacular names for all sorts of races, and I'll just name you some. Yid, He, Mick, Spick, Polak. I would just say, in retrospect, first off, I don't know how I acquired those names. I don't remember those names being bandied about my house, but maybe they were. I don't think they were. Let me put it that way. But somehow I acquired these names. I can still sort of recall them. Even the word Jew, if you will, has that ring, you know, he's a dirty Jew, that kind of thing. I just hope, I don't know, I never hear Emma and Ethan use terms like that, and I'm not sure how common they were in my language, but I hope that they're living in a world where that doesn't occur. I just think it's horrible that you just dismiss a whole nation, if you will, as a bunch of dirty Japs. Well, that's just bad news. You know, though, on the other hand, I cannot think, recall, if you will, please, I cannot recall a really derogatory name like Yid. A Yid. I can't recall a derogatory name about people who were really well off, had a lot of money, you know, the 400 or however you want to say that. You could say filthy rich, maybe. And even now I use the term sometimes as they're the beautiful people. You know, they have the yachts and the beautiful condominiums in Palm Springs and so forth. But I don't have an off color or name to name them. It seems to me that therefore maybe these terms which I heard when I was a kid and acquired when I was young. I mean, I didn't acquire them later in life. I didn't, you know, when I left home at 17, I didn't pick these names up. I knew them before. It may be something to do with class and money, and again, it's all too bad. Typically, whenever we tape, we run back the tape away and we listen to what was said before, and then we stop it and continue on from there. So that gives us a pause to think about maybe some of the things we said. And I think there is a truth. I've heard it was said by Emerson, but I'm not sure about that. But anyway, about the boat story, you know, I want a boat and all that, you know, 5 more feet. And it really is true. And the quote is, be careful what you wish, it may come true. Margo and I saw the movie The Titanic, which is a rather lengthy and famous, probably Academy Award winning movie, and it's been extremely popular. People, one of the remarkable things about the movie, which is pretty well done, we thought, was people go see it over and over and over again, and it appeals to really young people and older people and then like whatever. But it's been interesting. I said, and then later read that it really was the Gone with the Wind of this generation. In any case, I grew up believing, I don't know, you know, how does one acquire these ideas? I don't know. But I grew up believing that the Titanic was a sort of was a metaphor for man's hubris. That man was just aching to be put down. And in fact, in the very beginning part of the movie, before the ship set sail, one fellow says, even God can't sink this ship, you know. And that, I was raised, or somehow I acquired the idea, and again, this was when I was a kid, that acquired this idea that was just daring the powers to be, that you can't sink this ship, I'll show you we can. Now, interesting kind of idea. A metaphor for man's pride, I guess. The other thing, and I just have in the back of my mind, we recorded this somewhere, but I'll go through it. One of the scenes, several scenes in the movie, of course, is they're lowering lifeboats, and they were on ropes, you know, regular rope, sisal rope or whatever. And to think that they didn't always work and they had to cut the ropes away. Well, in fact, my brother, I think the story is my brother's godparents were O'Neill. Their names were O'Neill. They were from Ireland. I don't know how else they work into my family. I really don't know. I remember going visiting them and the like. But in any case, the O'Neills came over on the Titanic and they were in the hole. They were poor Irish people in the hole of the ship. I'm trying to dredge the word up. The
steerage.
Steerage. They were steerage passengers. And the story is when the boat sank, they went up on deck, and on the deck, the woman, Mrs. O'Neill, noticed a jackknife, or some kind of a knife, but I think a jackknife. And for whatever reason, she leaned down and picked it up. And then she got into a lifeboat with her husband, and the boat was lowered, and it got stuck somehow. The rope wouldn't, you know, got caught in the pulley somehow. And it just happened, and they showed people cutting the ropes in the movie, so there must be some factual basis for this. That she produced her jackknife, and they cut the rope away, and the lifeboat was cast adrift. And one of the important points of the story, and in fact, historically true, they didn't have enough lifeboats because they didn't think the ship could sink. In any case, they didn't need them. But I also think that this was not man's finest hour, and you might think about how O'Neill got on that lifeboat, and it was supposedly women and children first, and he survived. I bet they didn't talk about that. And something to think about. Finest hour. I think there were a lot of stories, in fact, on the Titanic of heroism, but I think there were probably a lot of stories that we really don't want to know about.